Let's say that I'm using a product and you remove this thing that I liked, but, you know, and so now I've got a decision to make, right? Like, they removed this thing I liked, now what am I gonna do? But if I've had really great experience with that company and, you know, I know the support people and I just think about switching, the first question in my head is going to be, am I gonna get as good of an experience somewhere else? Because features change all the time in products, right? They're added, they're removed. You go to a different product and they've got a different set of features. But one thing that you can't easily duplicate is people. And people doing support, putting kind of a human face on the company, that can't be duplicated.
Welcome back, everyone. This is the Support Ops Podcast. It's a show devoted entirely to bringing some humanity back to the world of customer support. Check out my blog at supportops.co, or you can follow along on Twitter. The handle's at supportops there. I'm your host, Chase Clemens. Big thanks to our awesome partner, Snappy. I absolutely love this app. It's drop-dead easy to use, which means you get more time focusing on customers rather than learning how to use yet another app that you need. Plus, they have this great new tool called the Team Wall. It's the perfect place to share news, wins, and other important info, all without ever leaving your app. You'll start with an entirely free 30-day trial, and I'm betting you'll be in love with it by the end of day one. Go check them out at supportops.co/snappy. This is episode number 21 with Justin Jackson as the guest here. Today, I first got hooked on Justin's podcast called Product People. Check it out, productpeople.tv. And then I found out that he's also the author of some great posts on his website, too. Along with all that, he's the product manager for a profitable web app. And when you put all that together, I thought he'd be great to have on the show because he'll be able to give us the view of customer support from that product manager role, and we'll all learn a few things along the way. So, Justin, welcome to the show.
Hey, Chase. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. How's your day going so far?
It's going well. It's a beautiful bluebird day here in Vernon, British Columbia, which is where I live now. And yeah, it's hot. So I've been out enjoying the sun a bit today and back in the office now here with you.
See, I'm on a roll. This is my second Canadian guest. So,
and it's a great country. You should have more guests from Canada.
So let's start with some basics here. Just give our listeners a little background on who you are and what you do.
Sure. So I think I've been building things with computers since about 1985. I was 5 years old when I got my first computer, and loved technology and computers all through high school. In college, decided to go to school for business. And then I worked actually in the nonprofit sector for about 8 years. And then in 2008, where I'm working right now, they gave me a call and asked if I wanted to come work for them. And I basically started kind of ground level with them, doing a lot of support, a lot of customer experience type things. And I've stayed with them for 5 years, and now I find myself in the product manager role. So I've had a lot of kind of support experience, and we have a really support-driven culture.
See, you're going to be perfect for the show. I love it. I already love it. So, you know, getting the support perspective from that product manager's viewpoint, how important is it to have great customer support when you already have a great product going on?
Well, you know, even for the best products, I think support contributes a big portion of the overall experience, especially for non kind of technical or non geek customers. So the formula kind of in my head is a great customer equals great product plus great support. But I mean, I've even said in the past that you could have a not very great product, and if you had great support, you could still have a good user experience. So for me, actually, support is almost, I mean, I think having a great product is important, obviously, because that's what I do every day. But to me, support is a part of the experience. It's part of what makes a product great. And I'm thinking about that all the time. Even if we build something that's amazing, like a great feature, I know that support, the customer support around that feature, is going to be equally important.
Which brings up a good point here. When you've got a new feature or a new product or that kind of thing, how early should that product manager be thinking about the support flow? Is it something that kind of comes in late in the game, or is it something you start at the, like when you're sketching things out on a piece of paper?
Well, I mean, for me, it was really helpful having done customer support all those years before I got this role. And also just, like, our company's fairly small. I think we have 11 people now, full-time. And everybody does support in some way or the other. And the majority of us, so everyone on the business team, everyone in all of our web designers, myself, we all answer the phone as well. And so we kind of have, like, there's a few people that are more dedicated to answering the phone. But all of us, if we see the phones ringing, we'll all pick up. And then the developers would be also responsible for answering email and things like that. So we have a really kind of support-driven culture. And because I'd had all that time doing support before I became the product manager, I'm thinking about the support cost of everything we build all the time. That's an interesting perspective, because I think, you know, if you've never talked to a customer or never had to walk them through something, you might not have any idea that the thing that you're building could cause all sorts of havoc down the line and end up costing the company more money, which is always a factor, right? If you want to be profitable, you want to keep your costs down, you want to keep customers happy. And so for me, like, as soon as we think about a new feature and we start debating it as a team, because we're all answering the phone, we all kind of have this idea in our head of, okay, well, this is really cool, this thing that we're talking about, but what's it going to be like to support this? What kinds of things should we be thinking about? So for us, I think we're thinking about that fairly early.
Yeah, I like that term, support cost, and you know, looking at how much is this going to cost in the terms of, you know, customers contacting our support team and that kind of thing. Can you give us a good example of a time that you looked at a new product and kind of you were thinking about that support cost, just to give us like a concrete kind of real life practical look at it?
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to think of a good example here. I mean,
yeah, not to put you on the spot or anything, you know.
No, I mean, right now, so we have an email newsletter web app. It's mm-hmm. called Industry Mailout, and it's primarily for bigger organizations like universities, governments, banks, that type of kind of bigger organization. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, every time we especially add anything to the editor, so when you're editing email newsletter, we're always like thinking a lot about, you know, how can we keep this UI as simple as we can? And, you know, we want to move forward with the product too. And so we've been trying some things like new kind of editable areas and things like that. And, you know, one way we kind of gauge how much support cost is going to take is we start, you know, giving it, rolling it out to a small percentage of users. And as those users give us feedback and as they ask us questions, we can kind of see, okay, how much time is this actually taking? And, you know, we try to record those things, you know, so we use Desk as our support software. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to get a sense of, you know, how often do these things keep coming up? We have a weekly meeting for everyone that's kind of doing regular support, and we kind of go over the things that are maybe causing a lot of trouble. And so if there's one feature that seems to be, you know, really causing a lot of pain, we go in and we try to look at that and ways we could make it better. So I think that's probably the best example I can think of right now, like specifically, like just how an editing interface, how complicated that can get. And even though it might make perfect sense to you as a product designer, once you get it in someone's hands, again, especially like someone who's only using Microsoft Word, that's like the software they're in all day, you see right away like what kind of problems they run into.
Man, it must be nice to design for somebody that's using Microsoft Word all day. You can just put buttons everywhere. Just everywhere.
Well, you know, that it's an interesting thing because you do have these products like Excel and Word that are really popular, but people have had years and years and years to use them and, you know, get to know them, and they have kind of certain workflows. Mm-hmm. And so it's actually the challenge we have is that, you know, they want, and everyone, so what's the joke about Word? Like the joke is that, you know, people only know 15%, but everyone has a different 15%.
Exactly.
So, you know, people come and ask, people want that kind of functionality in the product, but you know that the more weight you add on the product, the harder it is to support and the harder it is just to give a better experience kind of site-wide. So it has its challenges as well. You know, I've just started using Medium. It's Ev Williams' new startup for, it's kind of not blogging or publishing.
I don't really know where that fits in, the whole Medium. Because I've seen it before and I'm like, wait, so you're posting on somewhere beside your site? I don't know. It just kind of felt weird to me. So I was just going to let you figure it out and then let you tell me what you thought, basically. Because you've seen some success with it.
Yeah, it's weird. It feels similar to writing for a magazine, mm-hmm. or whenever I've been mentioned by like a magazine in an online, you know, sense. It feels similar to that. I had some of my stuff published in Lifehacker, so it's kind of like that. It's like it's own thing, its own publication, and people read it like a magazine. But their editing interface is really, really great for writing. And I was interested in it because we have a CMS as a part of our system, right? So the way they were able to get that system so simple is they don't allow people to have bulleted lists, tables, or really anything else. It's just like bold, italic, mm-hmm. and that's it. And I think, you know, I would love to be able to offer something like that to our customers, but because they're so used to Microsoft Word, that would become a support issue right away. Like they need to be able to put in tables and bullets and everything else. So there's this weird balance where, you know, there's two kinds of support requests, right? There's people that are unhappy because something's not working for them, and there's people that are unhappy because they can't do something that they want to do in your software. They want a new feature, essentially. And balancing those two is really hard because the more you add, the more likely things are going to get broken or that they're going to be hard to use.
Yeah, which kind of brings up another good point. So say a customer comes to you and they need a specific kind of functionality or a specific feature tool, that kind of thing. You know, your support side probably wants to make them happy, but the product manager side is thinking, well, this is going to weigh down on what we're using. So how do you balance those two?
Oh, man, with
I need your secret right here. I need the big silver bullet.
Well, there's a couple different ways to deal with it. And so one way is just grunt work. So let's say that somebody wants tables are a good example because I don't know if you've done any HTML emails, but they're a real pain. That all the email clients render HTML differently. Their support is really different between, for example, Gmail and Outlook 2007.
There's a reason why I don't work for a company like that.
So it can get really messy, and you know, there's some things that we could turn into a feature, but would be an enormous amount of work and might be difficult to execute on. Mm-hmm. Those things, we often just say, okay, well, we're just going to do support grunt work. So if someone calls up and says, you know, this isn't rendering properly when I preview it, we'll go in and we'll manually look at it and go into the HTML and manually fix those things. And that is in some ways more kind of expedient than us spending a lot of time on a feature that, you know, maybe is an edge case or is maybe just so big that we couldn't actually execute on it. So I think sometimes it's grunt work, sometimes in between. So if we know, you know, it's going to be months before we can work on that, we would just tell the customer, you know, in the meantime, we're going to keep helping you do that. So if they, you know, they need regular help with that, we say, just give us a call and we'll actually assist you every time you need to do that. So those are some of the things we've done. We've also killed some features that just caused way too much problems.
Oh, wow. You rolled it out to everybody and then decided to pull it back?
Yeah. So
I've got to know about that. That sounds terrifying.
Yeah. So, I mean, we also, you have to understand our customer base, our monthly cost is kind of in the right range for large organizations. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, we actually have we don't have a ton of customers. You know, it's in the thousands, but it's definitely less than 5,000.
Right.
And so we're not talking about an enormous amount of users, but we're still talking about thousands of people.
Enough to make an angry mob outside of your office.
Yeah, there's enough to get like some good feedback when something happens. So the way we've killed features in the past is we've first looked at who's using them. We kind of remove it from the public's view, but we keep it on those folks that are still using it and try to reach out to those customers and basically say, you know, you can keep using this as long as you want, but we're not going to be developing it anymore. And here are actually some other tools that we think you could use that are actually going to be way better and will probably save you time or save you money. So that's kind of the approach we've taken. And there's probably a few features that we've killed that are still in use, like the customer's still using them. But we've been able to at least minimize the amount of the number of support tickets we get for those things.
We kind of ran into a similar situation. You know, Basecamp Classic had the option to use textile code and textile formatting inside of its editor, right? And when we moved to the new Basecamp and redid everything, we completely pulled that out because you can really mess things up accidentally, not even knowing textile. And all of a sudden, you know, you save your message and there's these weird bold and italics things going on and there's list out of nowhere and all sorts of things. So we completely killed that off. But we were moving from like one product into a completely new product. So that kind of helped out a little bit. That's pretty awesome that you still at least left those in there for the customers that were using it.
Yeah. And I mean, the nice thing is that eventually there's some attrition. So mm-hmm. I think we've been around for about 11 years. And so, you know, if you kill something, you know, let's say we killed something 3 years ago, eventually people just stop using it. And then you can, you know, kind of almost completely remove it from the product.
Throw a little party.
Yeah. And so, I mean, there's been times where we've had to, I'm trying to think of an example, but where we've radically changed something and you definitely get feedback. You know, some people don't like it. Some people like it. The only way to move forward is you have to, you know, try things and get the feedback and then kind of incorporate that the best you can. But you're never going to make everybody happy all of the time.
Yeah, I think, you know, it usually kind of settles down after a while, the kind of initial, not backlash, yeah, but like reaction. I guess Facebook probably experiences the most. They're just like, hey, we're going to completely redo this. And everyone's up in arms. And then a month later, we're like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, support actually helps quite a bit with this. Because let's say that, you know, I'm using your product and you remove this thing that I liked. But, you know, and so now I've got a decision to make, right? Like they removed this thing I liked. Now what am I going to do? But if I've had really great experience with that company and, you know, I know the support people and I just think about switching, the first question in my head is going to be, am I going to get as good of an experience somewhere else? Because features change all the time in products, right? Mm-hmm. They're added, they're removed. You go to a different product and they've got a different set of features. But one thing that you can't easily duplicate is people. And people doing support, putting kind of a human face on the company, that can't be duplicated. And if I'm going to go somewhere else, you know, that's going to be something I'm thinking about is, well, what, I'm not going to get to talk to Annie anymore when I, you know, I have trouble. Or, you know, I'm not going to get this level of service that I've enjoyed here. So I think support, again, to kind of go back to that idea of support contributing to a great experience, I think it helps with all that stuff. It helps with moving products forward. Because to move products forward, you need to kill certain features and you need to add new ones. It's going to upset some people when you do things like that or redesigns or anything. But the one constant can be what people are taking care of me every time I need help.
Which is a good kind of way. We're going to shift gears a little bit. You know, your support, I don't even use industry mail out, but I've only heard good things about the support, which is what you want. I mean, that's what you want to hear about when people are talking about your company. So,
oh, awesome.
Yeah. Congrats. You're doing great. So the one thing I noticed first off, that the first time I heard about you guys and went to check out the site, you know, phone support was a big thing. The number's right there on the top, and then comes email or the support site, that kind of thing. But first and foremost, it was, here's a phone number, call us if you need us. So I'm guessing it's pretty big for you guys, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, phone support has been really big for us. And I remember when I came to the company 5 years ago, I was kind of like a typical geek, didn't want to talk on the phone. Like whenever I sent in support requests for, you know, something I needed help with, it was always by email. Mm-hmm. And I would have never thought of calling a number, partly because usually phone support is really terrible. You know, you get an automated system, you've got to go through phone menus, which are the absolute worst. Then you finally get somebody and they, you know, they might, their domain knowledge might not be that good. And so phone support in my history had been kind of frustrating. And then we got, I started working for Industry Mailout, and the founder, Greg, said, well, one of the things we do here, it's part of our culture, is we all answer the phone from the CEO, you know, all the way down. And at first I was kind of like, that doesn't make sense, you know, why would we do that? But once I could see, when, you know, once I'd been there for a while and I could see it in action, it started to make more sense. So, you know, I think you need to do what's right for your customers. And for us, most of our customers are non-technical people in big organizations, and those kinds of people are used to using the phone. And so phone support makes sense for them. And actually, maybe we can talk about this a little bit later, because there's this other idea of support people being inside salespeople, mm-hmm. Which kind of lends itself to phone support as well. But yeah, we found, for our customers, it's hard to do. It's not easy. I mean, it's the phone rings and you need it to answer it, and you need people there to answer it. So that part is difficult. You know, we've got to, you know, trade off on lunches. When are you going to go for lunch? When are you going to go? You know, we all kind of figure it out, just to make sure that there's always someone there to answer the phone. And you know, there's some people that, you know, might abuse it and might, you know, call way too much or what have you. But to tell you the truth, actually, that doesn't happen very often. And the benefits so far have seemed to kind of outweigh any of the cons. You know, scheduling, for example, like that. Yeah, it's tough to schedule phone support, but the benefit on the customer side, especially in terms of, again, if we want to talk about sales and retention with phone support go through the roof. Like, if we can get someone on the phone, we've done studies on this. Like, if we can get someone on the phone before they become a customer, and usually we'll, like, even take them through a demo over the phone, the likelihood of them becoming a customer greatly increases. And the people that call us on the phone for support tend to stick around longer as a customer. So it also kind of feeds into that lifetime value calculation. You know, people that use phone support seem to stick around longer and are happier.
So from the technical side of this, just so I can kind of wrap my head around it, I'm a customer, I dial up the number, and does it ring like multiple phones at once, or is it like specific people are like doing rotations on the phone at that moment, or how does that kind of work?
Yeah, so again, so it's a small company, 11 people. At different points, we've had offices in like people working remotely. Mm-hmm. So there was a fellow in Toronto, and now I'm here in Vernon, but the head office is in Edmonton. Mm-hmm. And so the way we've done it is we have a PBX system, so like a, you know, a voice over IP.
Right.
And it's basically we have a bunch of actual analog lines going in it, so we know that there's a lot of that the quality is good. So voice over IP, like when it's just over the internet, is not great, in my experience anyway. So what we do is we have analog lines coming into this phone server, and then it's voice over IP in our network.
So oh, that's neat.
So we have a VPN that extends, you know, wherever our people are. So, you know, I'm a part of it here. And yeah, the phone rings, and we've just made ring groups. So there's certain people that get kind of first ring. And then if the phone rings X number of times, it transfers over to, for example, the developers. So the developers would be kind of the last resort to mm-hmm. pick up the phone. But, you know, if all the other people are busy and it rings X number of times, it would go to their phones. And yeah, that basically it rings anybody that that's kind of active in that ring group. And if I'm in a Skype call, like right now, I just put do not disturb on my phone, and it bypasses my phone, but it rings all the other phones.
See, that's neat. It's one of those where kind of when I talk with people about phone support, everyone's kind of got their own little setup going. Mm-hmm. And the whole, like, it's VPN and then it hooks into the analog, that's a really great way of getting around some of those quality, audio quality problems when it comes to VoIP. So that's neat.
Yeah. Yeah, it's worked for us so far. I mean, voice over IP is still a really messy technology. Like, there's all sorts of providers, and we kind of rolled our own, and that's got challenges too. But in terms of like the actual system and, you know, the way it's set up, yeah, we've really liked it. And it's, you know, it's enabled us to do things like, you know, have people working remotely. So, you know, it rings in Toronto at the same time it rings in Edmonton. That kind of feature set, we couldn't actually get that from the phone company here. So there's some cool things like that seem to work really well.
So one of the things you keep coming back to is kind of the phone support was a great example of it. Like, everyone doing support and answering the phone and helping with the whole sales and marketing and that kind of thing. So when it comes to your team, especially since you're kind of small, is it kind of everyone's wearing these multiple hats at once?
Yeah. I mean, as we've gotten, so when I joined, I think I was employee number 5. And like I said, now I think we're at 11 or 12. And so, you know, as we gotten a little bit bigger, we're still a small team, but as we've gotten a little bit bigger, we've been able to, each of us have been able to specialize a little bit more. But, you know, there's definitely the sense of, like, when we hire people, we don't want them to be just great designers. We want them to be great designers and great with people and great with customers, and able to, you know, if for whatever reason, like let's say 2 or 3 people are on vacation and you're a developer and you're on the phone, we want you to be able to talk to people and be able to show them the software and be able to even do some, you know, some inside sales, basically, answer their questions and hopefully help get them signed up. So those are the kind of people we've been looking for. And, you know, definitely on the development side, they're more focused on just developing, but everybody else, you know, one good example would be this one fellow we have who's really into marketing. So, you know, he's answering phones like just like everyone else and answering emails. But in addition to that, his responsibility is marketing. And so he's rebuilding our marketing websites. He's, you know, thinking about SEO. He's thinking about he's looking at our Google Analytics account. He's looking at our Kissmetrics account and trying to get insights. And so he's empowered to do that. But at the same time, we all kind of understand that there's this responsibility we have to supporting the customer.
That's awesome. And, you know, I guess it's kind of in vogue nowadays or whatever for the entire company to be doing support or at least pitching in, that kind of thing. But it sounds like this is like really ingrained in your culture from the start. It's not something that's just, oh, this will be a neat idea to try out.
Yeah. I mean, especially I think if you've ever been a small company and you've grown slowly, then this in some ways, this is actually some career advice. Like if you join a company that's 5 to 10 people, your ability to kind of step up and say, I'm willing to help wherever I'm needed is, in my experience anyway, is going to really help your career. It's going to help how you kind of advance and, how you get promotions and things like that.
You become more valuable.
You become more valuable. Yeah. So I think specialists can be really valuable as well, especially when a company gets bigger. But in that 5 to 10 person stage, if you're someone that's a little bit more general and you're willing to kind of jump in wherever you're needed and learn on the job and even do the kind of those messy, undesirable things that, other people don't want to do, that's, again, in my experience, is going to be to your advantage when your boss is looking to, you know, hire somebody, promote somebody for a different role. And so, yeah, I think from the beginning, it's been in our culture because we're small. And when there's only 5 of you and it's all sitting in the same room and the phone is ringing and everyone else is busy, it's kind of like, well, pick it up, you know? Yeah. Like that.
Somebody's got to answer the phone.
Somebody's got to do it. And I think the other thing that's been really ingrained in our culture is so far, so at 11 or 12 people, we've wanted to hire really high quality people and pay them really well. And in, in support and so even like software support, the wages can go anywhere from, you know, minimum wage per hour all the way up to kind of a respectable, you know, what, you know, designers and developers and salespeople are making. And we wanted to be kind of in the higher range. We wanted to be pay people a really good wage and treat them like professionals. And so, they're going to answer the phone and they're going to be answering emails, but that we feel like that's such an important task that we want kind of the best people on that job.
Fair enough. So final question, just kind of wrap the whole show up. And I love this one because it really shows, you know, customer support at its best. So tell me about the best customer service, the best customer support that you've ever gotten where you're the customer. So you're receiving that customer support.
Oh man. I knew you're going to ask this question.
See, everyone.
And I didn't even think about it.
Everyone okay. Gets this question just because the stories are so, so great.
Yeah. Oh man. And I'm sure I've got some.
No okay, pressure.
Let me think. Well, I'll give a shout out to my friends at Sprintly because I think they've done a really good job. There's one thing I think if you're a small company and you're the founder of that company, jumping into support every once in a while really makes the customer feel special and valued. And I was an early user of Sprintly, and Joe Stump, who's the founder. He was at Dig before and Simple Geo. And he answered some of my questions personally. And that really made a difference to me. It just made me feel kind of valued and special, and also made me feel like I could have kind of direct input into the product. So I think, yeah, I think those folks at Sprintly, and now that, I mean, now they've got support people and they're still doing a great job over there with the people they've hired. But just knowing that there's, you know, the founder jumps into support every once in a while, I think makes a big, big difference.
You know, the same thing happens with us at 37 Signals. Jason will do a day, about a day or two a month, doing a support rotation, just answering cases. And he could be breaking the most horrible news the customer's ever heard, but then they'll be like, oh, it's Jason Fried. So it's awesome. We love it. It's fine.
Exactly.
It's some kind of special connection there.
Exactly. Although, you know, you also build relationships with, even if you're not like a rock star founder or whatever, I think, you know, so I don't, do you know Jason Remus?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, Jason Remus, he's doing some support at Sprintly, and he answers emails, and it's like, oh, Jason, it's so good to hear from you, you know? So I think the interesting thing about support is you can make a name for yourself. And I think in Jason Remus's case, you know, he's kind of known as this really kind of kind soul on the internet. And just getting a response back from him kind of made me feel like, oh, wow, this is great. Like, wow, Sprintly's got you doing this. And that, I think it doesn't, in some ways, it doesn't matter who you are. If you're a kind human being and you're helping people out, people are going to take notice. And, you know, that can go a long way.
And I don't think I can add anything to that. So, Justin, it's been great to have you on the show. Thanks for talking to us for a bit.
Oh, man, Chase, this went by way too fast. Thanks for having me on the show.
So that means episode 21 is in the books. I guess we're officially like of drinking age now. So enjoy like a shot of whiskey or something. You can reach out to Justin on Twitter. He's at MIJustin. He's also on the web, justinjackson.ca, since he's from Canada. He gets the special little .ca. Show notes are up over at supportops.co/podcast. And if you like the podcast, just rate us in iTunes if you ever open it up. You know, search for Support Ops in the top and just leave us a nice little rating and review there. Thanks again for listening. I'm Chase. And until we talk again, have an awesome week.